Okay. I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. We do have a quorum. The first item of business is the approval of the minutes of the March 14th meeting. Is there anyone who has reviewed them and would like to move approval?
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the minutes for the March 14th meeting and I move approval of the minutes.
Representative Lee moves approval of the March 14th meeting. So any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Also have approval of the March 15th minutes. Is there anyone who has read them and would like to move approval? Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, March 15th is very memorable, and I'd like to move those minutes.
Fair enough. Representative Zerwas moves approval of the March 15th minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Vang. While you're coming forward, I will move that House File 2112 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I understand you also have an amendment, Representative Vang. Would you like me to move that?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I will move the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion to that? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The bill is in the shape you would like it. Representative Vang, please describe your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good morning, everyone. This bill authorizes the MDA to use an expedited rulemaking process when developing rules required under the State Industrial Hemp Development Act. As you may already know, industrial hemp was taken off the Controlled Substances Act through the latest farm bill, federal farm bill, and this expedited rulemaking process will help MDA comply with the federal law by 2020. And the amendment is part of another bill that is not scheduled until later in the month on the 26th, and so it also has a rulemaking component. It is in regards to the hemp voluntary certification program, and we figured it will be most use of time and also saving the committee's time by having this amendment here since it's in your jurisdiction too as well. And I also have a testifier here with me today to testify in support of this bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Henry Erdman. I'm here today on behalf of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 1189. We support the rulemaking authority and expedited rulemaking for the Department of Agriculture and also the hemp certification program that has been amended into this bill. There was a weird provision actually in the 2015 enactment of the Industrial Hemp Pilot Project, which said this rulemaking authority would go into effect after the federal government had enacted full-scale commercial production of industrial hemp, which they did in December, and we're fully supporting this bill and thank Representative Vang for bringing these initiatives forward.
Thank you, Mr. Erdman. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 2112? Okay, seeing none, is there any member discussion? Okay. Who knew hemp was so non-controversial? Representative Vang, any closing remarks?
No, thank you so much for your support.
Okay, thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2112, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. I understand Representative Hornstein is on his way, but he's not here yet. So, Representative Nelson, would you care to do your bill? So we have House File 1962, and I understand this is going to Ways and Means. While people are getting ready, I will move that House File 1962 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I don't see an amendment to that. Would you like to present your bill, Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Let me get my testimony up here. I tried to get it printed this morning, and my email won't let me in this morning. So, members, this bill sets up a task force to look at some of the problems that people have had, the disability community has had, with accessing technology and information from the state of Minnesota. Senator Westrum approached me to ask me if I'd offer this bill, and I was proud to take it on in the Minnesota House. I have a sister-in-law who's deaf and lost her hearing when she had measles at age 5. And she's faced, since then, has faced the issues about lifelong issues with the disabilities. People with disabilities comprise 20% of the state's population. It's time we made sure that we have the standards in place that give them access to the information they need. The executive branch developed technology accessibility standards in 2009 through cross-disability efforts led by the Commission of the Deaf, the Deafblind, and the Hard of Hearing. They are leading efforts with this legislation, too, along with the Council on Disabilities. Senator Westrum has asked me to read a letter that he has brought. He was going to come and testify but was unable to get here today. And he says, "Dear representatives and members of the Government Operations Committee, I want to thank the Representative Nelson for bringing this very important issue to the committee. I am so thankful for the bipartisan support on this legislation has received, and the bill has the legislature look at itself and relook at accessibility issues. It will look at what we are doing well and what we could do better and adopt standards so legislators, staff, advocates, lobbyists, and citizens with disabilities have access to the information they need to do their work. In 2009, the executive branch adopted technology accessibility standards, and I testified in both the House and the Senate in support of the legislation, hoping these standards would help make my job easier and better for all Minnesotans with disabilities. I'm here 10 years later asking the legislature to adopt the standards for itself. It will help make a more inclusive environment so we can attract more legislators, staff, interns, lobbyists, and advocates with disabilities. The legislation will bring together a working group that will help the Senate, House, and joint committees to find the best ways to make documents and web content accessible to anyone who needs it, including people who are blind, visually impaired, print-disabled, and other disabilities. The legislative staff has always been committed to making the work of the legislature accessible to the citizens of Minnesota. They are dedicated staff that work on the legislative website in a coordinated way with the House and the Senate and the LLC to make their websites accessible. The challenge is to deal with hundreds of documents that the institutions receive every week and how to make them accessible. We cannot allow the perfect to stand in the way of the good, and this bill will allow for exceptions to the standards when it would cause an undue burden. This is the aspect of the life that I deal with on a regular basis. Technology has revolutionized accessibility for people with disability, and now it's time to evaluate where the legislation can improve and the use of technology to make it more accessible. I ask for your support of this bill and I urge you to support House File 1962. And for those freshman member legislators who don't know, Senator Westrum is blind, and he used to serve in the House.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Looks like you have a testifier. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony or your statement that you're just here to answer questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for being here today. I think the letter speaks for itself. We want to
please.
I'm Mary Hartnett, yes. With the Executive Director of the Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. And thank you, Representative Nelson, for assuming this. And thank you to the Speaker, to the House Minority Leader, for signing on to this bill. And to also, on the Senate side, we were able to get the Senate Majority Leader Gazelka and Senate Minority Leader Bach to sign on. So we have truly a bipartisan support for this bill. It's time for it the time is now. I think the letter speaks for itself. I'm just here to answer any questions that any of you have. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Hartnett. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak on House File 1962? Okay. Seeing none, member discussion. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson, thank you for your work on this. And Ms. Hartnett, always nice to see you. Mr. Heller, spends a few minutes advocating for some issues related to these issues, and will this effort help solve some of his concerns? Because I have to be honest, I don't fully understand some of what he's saying, but I want to help him, and I know he's sincere about what he's trying to do. But we just had a discussion a few seconds ago in the Rules Committee as well, and I think Representative Dowd is working on an effort. So maybe you can, and that's going to become before Rules, but I think that's a Rules kind of effort. But this sounds like a better approach and then to come up with a real solution. So,
Ms. Hartnett.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, without standards, the staff at the legislature are left to assume that they have to respond to every request that is made. I'm going to get a little geeky here, but not really geeky. The state's standards are called, that comply with federal standards, Section 508. And we have what's called 16E.03 Subdivision 9 as our IT accessibility standards. And built into that is an undue hardship clause and an advisory committee that decides what's reasonable and what isn't reasonable. And our state has decided that level 2 within the web content access guidelines is what is a reasonable standard that can be achieved. So this will help to let the staff know with an advisory committee, what is a reasonable response? The staff will not be able to ever be perfect. What is reasonable? And I think that will really help. I think the staff and Mr. Heller know what the legislature can do with the resources that it has. And secondly, there may be some specialized requests that certain people with disabilities have that go beyond that floor, that go above that floor, that would request an accommodation. We're talking about anybody being able to go to the websites and get any document at any time with the standard that's reasonable. There are some individuals that will need special equipment in order to be able to read those documents. That would be an ADA accommodation. There's a difference between access, being able to go and get at any time, and accommodation that meets the needs of individuals with disabilities that don't have access at that level. So I think it will take care of it.
Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Hartnett. I very much appreciate it. I was just you know, he often comes and has ideas, and I just want to make sure that we're trying to, and it sounds like you are. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I just a editorial comment. For those of you who haven't had the opportunity to serve with Senator Westrom, he's one of the most impressive members that I've ever served with in my time here and what he's able to do and accomplish. But anyways, that's just a worthless editorial, but I really am impressed by the gentleman.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to say that I think it's great that if we pass this bill, the legislature will be agreeing basically to eat its own dog food. This section of 16E is sometimes hard to interpret, and in the effort to doing that for ourselves, I would hope that we will learn some things that might help us improve that section of state statutes to make it much easier for other organizations, including local governments, to comply with these requirements as well. In fact, I'm committed to working with the Minnesota Council of Disabilities this summer on such an initiative, and I think the efforts that will happen as a result of this bill passing will make that job easier.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Selk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Everybody please understand that what I'm about to say does not mean that I want your sympathy or I want any kind of special treatment, but I don't hear well. Some of you have realized that because I've said what about four times before. And what's going on there is I read lips, I don't hear, and this has been for a long time, and I don't see that well. I've had glasses since early in my elementary years. What happens is inside my brain, I'm processing all of those things to try to come out with what is going on. Who is saying what? In my environment, everybody is saying something, and I have to concentrate on who is saying what and that sort of thing. And also I bring this to your attention is, please understand that everybody isn't capable the way you are. We oftentimes talk in a public sense, thinking everybody can hear us as if we were listening. And it just goes flying over my head. A lot of you have judged me over time and thought, well, he's just off in his own world, or he might have gotten distracted. He doesn't appear to be grasping everything that's going on and that sort of thing. Please understand that in terms of being a public body that speaks to the public, that we need to be more cautious about how we are doing that, because we oftentimes are producing something that cannot be grabbed a hold of. So I'm just speaking as a person to underline how important these small pieces of work are, whether it's the accommodation of that ramp or the accommodation of a better system. The loop system and the wireless system in this building is useless. I can turn my hearing aids on, put a loop around my neck, and end up hearing nothing more than what I would have heard with my hearing aids. The system just isn't there. I go over to the Capitol with the brand new loop in the floor that is very good quality, and it's like the person crawled inside my head and started talking, because that's the difference that an accommodation like that technology, which I wish we had everywhere, because it would help all of us that depend on it. So I appreciate that you listen to me. I sometimes find it opportune that I can just use myself as an example. So I'm not as spaced out as I might appear. You know, sometimes I'm not hearing you. Sometimes I'm not seeing what's going on. And so it's the merge of all those things that I have to process. Not that I need any sympathy. I just need sometimes you to know that that's what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sutton. Mm-hmm. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. I'm a big fan of actually, as we suggested here, making sure that we practice what we preach, and am actually quite supportive of this bill. The one question that I had is, I noticed that we have a 12-person panel, and it looks like the Speaker, the Majority Leader, and the Legislative Coordinating Commission will all appoint four each of these folks, and they will come from respective bodies, the Media Office, Information Technology, Legal and Fiscal Analysis, Secretary of the Senate, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. My question is this. This is a fantastic idea, and I want to do this. The question for you is, with these folks that are being asked to sit on this committee, I assume that this is being asked of them in addition to their regular work. Have we consulted these folks or made sure that we've talked to them to make sure that they are up to the task?
Ms. Hartnett.
Mr. Chair and Representative, Greg Huebinger is here, and he could speak to that. We have been working in consultation with the LCC and with the Chief Information Accessibility Officer and advocates, but he could speak to this.
Just if that you may. Thank you.
Yep. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Greg Huebinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I'd say at the outset, there is already an existing work group that's called LNET of IT folks and others that work to make the legislature's websites accessible and work together. This is a different work group that would include these other offices that you listed that would work collaboratively across the legislature to make sure that all of the documents and processes that we manage work together to make all of the documents available for all Minnesotans and accessible to all Minnesotans. We've had one meeting so far last spring to talk about this issue. It's a large endeavor, but it's one that is important and we will take on within our existing staffing structure.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative. And just to follow up on that, I thank you for that information. That's really helpful. And one other really good thing to note on this, members, is that, you know, one of the biggest challenges we overcome on any project is making sure that we have full support from up above. And so it looks like we do, in fact, have that support. So I'm delighted to see that. Thank you so much for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Is there any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Nelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I know Mr. Heller, that Representative Lilly talked about, he has a print reading disability, or he's advocating for those people, and it has to do with readers and how things, sometimes documents are presented and given to the legislature. And one recent one that we had that came from the Secretary of State's office had to do with, there was a shaded portion, and his reader doesn't read that properly. And so it'd be good to do this and have set some standards so people outside of the legislature, when they're bringing stuff to us, know that, so that when we put these on these documents on the website, that other people can read them.
Yes.
Ms. Hartnett.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Nelson, we also have another bill that Representative Hornstein's bill. What I understand is that about a good percentage of the documents that aren't accessible that come to the legislature are from the executive branch. And so we have a bill that is coming up before you that will amend the affirmative action plan and will require that state agency commissioners develop a plan for making sure that they have a deployment plan for how they're going to implement 16E. So I think that's going to help reduce the number of documents that are accessible that come to the Capitol.
Thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1962 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Hornstein. While you're coming forward, I'll move that House File 1968 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. You could please describe your bill, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1968 gets at the issue that Ms. Hartnett referred to just a few moments ago. We have an issue and a challenge retaining people with disabilities in their capacity as state employees. 56% of state workers who have a disability leave state employment after 1 year, 56%. And that contrasts with 9% of people without disabilities leaving state employment. So there is a huge gap, a huge disparity. And what House File 1968 attempts to do is to examine how we can, what are the strategies that we can utilize to address this very, very problematic disparity. And so, and again, you look at the data, 1 in 5 Americans, nearly 56.7 million, live with a disability. And they have a desire and willingness to contribute to the economy and to work, yet there are significant barriers to employment. And this despite the passage of the ADA, people with disabilities still experience unemployment rates far, far above the national average. And so, again, as the as we witnessed with the statistics I mentioned earlier, there's many, even outside of state government, we see disability and employment relative to the broader population to be very, very significant. So we will be looking at developing the skill set for this segment of the population. Really looking at utilizing this untapped pool of incredible talent for employment, not only in the public sector, but all sectors of the workforce. So in summary, Mr. Chair and members, people with disabilities are a key factor in the state's ability to build strong, inclusive workforces that translate into economic success. And while the state laws and Executive Order 1414 have made a difference, many individuals with disabilities remain unemployed or underemployed. Moving the needle on this critical workforce issue will require strengthening our policies, and this bill takes a step in that direction. So I have three testifiers Mary Hartnett, Eric Nooker, and Cody Olson. And I'm not sure the proper order, but I will make way for Ms. Hartnett.
Sure. Please identify yourself once more for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mary Hartnett, Executive Director, Commission of Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm just going to walk you briefly through the bill. It establishes a working group that would report on strategies for attracting and retaining state employee with disabilities by January 15, 2020. And it would be led by people with disabilities with Minnesota Management and Budget and MNIT at the table. It would clarify and eliminate outdated language in 14A.15, competitive and qualifying appointments, and would define disabilities included in these programs using the vocational rehabilitation definition for significant disabilities and strike the language that allows the state to hire people with disabilities in unpaid positions. It would strengthen affirmative action laws and data collection that is included in the state affirmative action plan. It would require compliance, a plan for compliance with the state's IT accessibility standards, and add metrics to the use of the state accommodation fund, and a plan to ensure that job applicants include collective bargaining agreement in their collective bargaining agreements to provide equal opportunity for job applicants and for current employees with disabilities who are seeking promotion. It would require Minnesota Management and Budget to consult with the Vocation and Rehabilitation Services and State Services for the Blind to develop strategies to recruit and retain employees. And it would eliminate caps on the percentage of appointments for state employment in which an agency fails to justify a non-affirmative hire. So that's basically the bill, and we have other testifiers here.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hartnett. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Eric Nooker. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you to Representative Horstein for introducing this important bill. I'm a state employee, and I'm here on my own time. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself. I was born deaf, and I use American Sign Language and cochlear implants to communicate. Being deaf is a part of who I am is not something I would change about myself. The communication barriers that I have overcome have made me a stronger, better person, and a lifelong advocate for people with disabilities. I have an undergraduate degree in horticulture and a master's degree in soil science, and I am a soil scientist for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I am fortunate to work in an environment where my employer makes sure that I have the access needed to do my job. In the office, I use a video phone with sign language interpreter relay service for phone calls. In the field, I use an app on my cell phone called InnoCaption, in which all the text of what the conversation is, the text is being typed out, and so I can just read along. And also for bigger meetings, I use sign language interpreters or CART, in which what is being said is being typed out. So I don't have a typical day on the job. I might be manning a nitrate clinic where well owners are testing the water of their well to see the levels of nitrate in the water, or I could be holding a nitrogen fertilizer management plan local advisory team meeting, or I could even be working with a farmer or crop advisor to do on-farm research under our Nutrient Management Initiative program. So as you can see, I receive accommodations that are necessary and the equipment necessary to do my job well. However, I have friends who are state employees who are not as fortunate. They may not be included in meetings because of the cost of accommodations and are told that they can get this information later. And even if they do get that information later, that's not the same as participating in the meeting mealtime. I know people who have to wait months to get a phone that is accessible for them or computer software that allows them to do their job effectively. And without a phone or without the software to level the playing field, they can't show what they are capable of doing. There is so much discussion about the state's workforce shortage, and there is an untapped pool eager to work for the state. People with disabilities. I want to see more people with disabilities who have so much to contribute and want to contribute as state employees. I want to see the state have a level playing field and others to have the same positive experience that I have had as a state employee with a disability. I urge you to support the study that will help retain state employees with disabilities, define which disabilities qualify for non-competitive appointments, and increase accountability and transparency of the state affirmative action statutes. Let's learn how we can recruit and retain the talent necessary to address the workforce shortage in the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Newker. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Cody Olson, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Council on Disability in support of this critical bill. We are a part of the Disability Agency Forum, which is a group of agency divisions, councils, and commissions that work on cross-disability issues to address barriers that citizens and state employees with disabilities face. People with disabilities face the highest unemployment rates in our country, and Minnesota is higher than the national average. These folks are eager to be part of our workforce. Governor Dayton signed Executive Order 1414 last year, and we were able to go from 3.8% of our state employees having disabilities to 7%. We are in strong support of this bill. Having such a large percentage of people with disabilities leave state government is alarming, and we need to have a study that is led by people with disabilities and a plan to ensure that we are able to retain these talented individuals. We need to gather more information and see what we are doing well and learn how we can improve and do better by improving our affirmative action plan. Thank you for hearing this critical bill, Representative Horstein and members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Olson. I also have a John Fechter on the list of people to testify. Oh, okay. Apparently he's not here. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 1968? Seeing none, member discussion. Representative Lee, then Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is just a comment. Thank you, Representative Horsey and Ms. Harnett for bringing this proposal forward. And, you know, there's much more for us to do, and I really, you know, do appreciate the duties of the working group to really look at how could we attract more people with disability to really enter the workforce that we have here at the state level. And I'm glad to hear that, you know, with the executive order from Governor Dayton, we went from 3.8 to 7, but that's still a very small number. Mm-hmm. And so I really hope that, you know, this will actually help us at the state level really determine what are some strategies to recruit more folks so that we could, you know, have them in our workforce and actually, you know, really see all of our communities in the state of Minnesota thrive. So I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment. A number of years ago, I used to work with Blue Cross, and there they have a number of people that are deaf. I mean, you cannot go into the cafeteria without seeing a large group of people who are using sign language. So my thought is, and the study will probably bear this out, that it's better that people not be isolated or unique in a setting as well. Mm-hmm. So once you get one or two, we need to do it, how would I put it, at a larger level than just an occasional person.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Any additional member discussion? Representative Salk.
Just for perspective, can you compare the use 7% as our number that we have that we're employing at this level? What's the analogous number to the general population and to the affected population?
Ms. Hartnett.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative, are you asking what percentage of people?
Let me just ask it maybe better.
So. Okay.
I can state
okay.
it in another way.
Thank
so
you.
We said that the current attainment is 7%. Okay. So if we were to mirror that then with the population, what's the percentage of the population that would be considered a similarly impacted people?
Ms. Hartnett.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative, thank you for that clarification. We were the lead agency that negotiated Executive Order 1414, and notify the legislature that we've gone down to 3.8% from actually 10% in 1999 to 3.8% in 2013. So we tried to negotiate for a 10% because 20% of the population is considered to have a disability. The recent research from Johns Hopkins University says that 20% of the population has a hearing loss that is so significant that it impedes their ability to understand spoken speech. 1% of those individuals use American Sign Language. The majority are have a hearing loss or a hard of hearing, and a smaller percentage have a combined hearing vision loss, about 1,400 in the state. So we are in the process of renegotiating Executive Order 1414 with the governor's office. I think we're hoping that we are able to negotiate for a 10% in 10% when the order is reissued. We're hoping.
Any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Hornstein?
Thank you very much for the hearing, Mr. Chair and members, and I ask for your support. This is timely, urgent, and very important for the Council on Disabilities.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
I'm sorry, Commissioner on Deafblind.
Okay. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 1968 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Gomez has a bill on the agenda. I understand there's an amendment that was not submitted in time, so we will hear that either at our next meeting or the meeting after that. So with that, then we will move to House File 1397, and I'll hand over the gavel. So I will move that House File 1397 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So last year I signed on to a bill that would move Minnesota to standard time, which is what states are currently allowed to do under federal law. I heard from several people that they weren't crazy about that approach, largely because they'd lose an hour of evening sunlight during the summer. So I did a little research. I heard about a proposal passed in Florida that would move the state to daylight savings time permanently once federal law allows for it. This seems to be the approach preferred by most people, is to have daylight savings time year-round so that we have that extra hour of evening sunlight in the summer. So all this bill does is says that once the federal government gives us permission, Minnesota will move to daylight savings time year-round. This is a proposal with broad and unlikely bipartisan support, I would say. It is supported by Speaker of the Minnesota House of Representatives Melissa Hortman, as well as President Donald Trump. It is supported by Representative Mike Freiberg, as well as Representative Sandy Lehman, who I've asked to be here to present the bill with me. We both had some handouts that are included in your packet. I included a few studies in there showing the adverse effects of time switches related to adolescent sleep and vigilance, the increased increased amount of depressive episodes related to the time switch, and the increase in fatal vehicle crashes related to the time switch. So I know Representative Lehman wanted to say a few things too, and we also have a testifier who was nice enough to come here all the way from Crystal.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Representative Freiberg, and thank you, who's Jerry now?
Representative Salk. Chair Salk.
Sorry. Chair Salk. Well, I'm really happy to be here. This is a fun bipartisan bill, as Representative Freiberg said. When I came to the legislature in 2016, I wasn't expecting to have constituents contact me about time changes, but I did. I had people contacting me and saying, could you do something about changing the clocks? We're really tired of doing this. And when I responded that there was actually a bill to eliminate daylight savings time, I got a lot of response. I signed on to the bill, as Representative Freiberg did. And then we started getting pushback. And people were saying, you know, we're only on standard time for 4 months out of the year. We're on daylight savings time for 8 months out of the year. And you think about that time in October, November, when you have, when it starts to get dark about 5:30, and then you push the clock back, and it starts to get dark about 4:30. It seems a little crazy, and then you start asking yourself, why are we doing this? Well, it's I think it's kind of fortuitous that we're here talking to you today, because actually March 19th is the anniversary of the start of daylight savings time. 101 years ago, daylight savings time was started March 19th, 1918. And it was started because of the war, World War I. And after the war ended, they discontinued the change. And then when World War II started, they reinstituted the change. And it became so popular that we've now expanded it to, as I said, 8 months out of the year. So it seemed practical to us that we instead have a bill to maintain daylight savings time, which you have in front of you right now. A similar bill is moving through the Senate. But as we looked at the federal level, we saw that Senator Marco Rubio is attempting to do this in the state of Florida. In fact, the state House and the state Senate in Florida has passed this. And now a bill is moving through Congress to allow Florida to do this. If we pass this here in the Minnesota House and the Senate, and it's signed by the governor, we likewise will go to Congress for their approval. But in the meantime, there's also a bill passing through Congress that would make this a national effort, which would make a lot of sense, so that nationally we would move to daylight savings time. So besides being a hassle, the handout, as Representative Freiberg said, kind of lays out here, there actually are physical and mental impacts on us. How many of you get a little depressed when you change that clock back to standard time in the fall? But you know that there's actually cardiac incidents, that there's car accidents, and there's workplace accidents, and other impacts actually on the economy. So this may not have priority in a budget year, but it has priority in people's lives because it impacts every single one of us. So with that, we have a testifier here who would like to add a few words to Mr. Chair.
Okay, go ahead and introduce yourself and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Kolb. I am a constituent of Representative Freiberg's, and I'd like to think one of the reasons why he may have signed on to this bill from my constant badgering about this particular topic. I'm going to tell a quick story. In 2006 was kind of my first foray into politics. I was volunteering at the state fair for Governor Tim Pawlenty's reelection effort. And at the state fair, I was approached by a woman who came up and said, "What is the governor's position on daylight savings time?" And I looked at the person next to me, and she looked at me, and we said, probably for it. I don't know. I'm not sure. And she said, "Well, I only vote for people who are against daylight savings time." So that was the wrong answer. And that was 2006. I was 26 years old at that point, and just kind of thought, "Well, that's kind of an odd thing," and sort of just filed that away and told that story twice a year every time we had to change our clocks. And then about 5 years ago, my wife and I had our first child. And if you have, maybe some of you have children and are past this toddler phase. I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. I argued with my daughter for about 10 minutes this morning about the fact that you do have to wear pants if you're going to leave the house. Children in particular are very sensitive to this time change. My kids, the disruption to the sleep cycle cannot be overstated. When you talk about a kid that has a very sensitive nature to this, to the 1 hour where it's maybe not a problem if you're a healthy 26-year-old when you're a little bit older and you've got a toddler that you're fighting with about her pants, that 1 hour makes a big difference. And so it may not be the most important thing that's going on out there. It may not be the most critical issue, but it is something that I think people care about, and I think we're seeing momentum both on the national level and here in the state. So I think the time is right. 100 years was long enough. Let's let it go. Thank you.
There are other testifiers. I have two other names here, so I'll just call Joe Torelli. State your name and continue with testimony.
Hi, my name is Joe Torelli, and I'm from the northeastern corner of Chanhassen that is not in Representative Nash's district. I'm in Kelly Morrison's district. Thank Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I come to you in support of this. I have been speaking about this, as the previous testifier has, for a long time. Everybody calls it spring forward. We don't hit spring until Thursday, okay? So we winter forward, and it's time to kind of change that. Over my career, I've worked in 18 time zones across 76 countries, covering major news events for NBC News. We were relocated from New York City by Apple 10 years ago, and this is my 10th Great North winter. One of the things that upsets me is the fact that we live in Eastern Standard Time 8 months a year, as was mentioned. I was very happy to see in Senator Rubio's Sunshine Act recently, after having forwarded my notes to my brother in Bradenton in Florida, that they adopted the 8 month, 4 month thing, which is great. And we only have 17 weeks in standard time a year, which is about the length of a regular NFL season, and then we have to switch back. The northwest corner, you may think, well, we're up north. What about the northwest corner of the time zone? So I did a study in one of my essays, Williston, North Dakota, which is top left corner of the central time zone. Yes, school buses would be picking up children earlier than sunrise. Sunrise would be at 9:44 a.m. Civil twilight would be about 9 o'clock. But you gain it back on the other side of that. And so we already send our children to school in the dark already here. So then that's at the solstice. That's on December 21. So it gets worse leading up to December 21, Christmas break. It's a whole lot better on the other side of that. I'm sorry that Representative Quam is not here, because I was going to get into Kepler's law of planetary motion. I didn't think that was appropriate. Pretty much the only collateral damage that we would have would be sundials, and that was where I was going to go with Kepler's laws of planetary motion. For Representative Zerwas's interest, there is a partner Senate bill. So I want to thank you for your time today. Happy to answer any questions, and I support this and hope we can add our names, our state, to the list supporting this, so that Representative Buchanan from Bradenton can get 1556 through the House, and Senator Rubio can get 670 through the Senate. And we can, the last time a precision clock has to be wound backwards, or as is suggested by manufacturers of precision timepieces, you let it die and you wind it forward. So we don't have to do that again. All right, thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Mike Hickey.
Good to see you.
Yeah, I see you.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Mike Hickey, just here as a citizen today. I don't have much throat, so I'm going to be extremely brief, which the committee will probably appreciate. But I want to thank Representative Freiberg for bringing this bill forward. A lot of us just dread the short daytime in the winter, and I'm a big exercise guy, an outdoor guy, but you don't have to be somebody who's stupid enough to try to go out and run in the winter to appreciate the benefits of this bill. Just somebody who simply wants to go for a walk their dog. The short daylight we have in the winter is just really pretty depressing, I think, to everybody. those of us who work hard, or when I am working hard, you go to work in the dark. You come home in the dark. You kind of go, God, I can't wait for March to come around. Even February, just give me a little more daylight. So really appreciate what we're trying to do here today. This, I think, year-round daylight savings time. First of all, daylight savings time itself, I think, has really improved people's lives, giving people that extra hour for exercise and outside activities. And going to year-round would really be tremendous. Just think, about 90-some percent of the days we'd have a little daylight till 6 or way beyond, and would really brighten up our lives, and the winter period would be a lot less dark. So I hope we can get this done. This bill's kind of taking a U-turn in the Senate. I'll leave that up to you, Representative Freiberg, to try to sort that out. But I sure appreciate the thrust of what you're trying to do today, and I just wanted to say thanks for doing it.
Thank you for your testimony. With that, are there anybody else that wants to testify to this bill? Seeing none, then questions from the members of the committee? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And wanted the first testifier, Mr. Kolb, could come back up and answer some questions. Mr. Kolb, we've heard in the introduction of the bill of Donald Trump's support for this move. What other policy provisions of Donald Trump's do you plan to now support?
I'd ask that question to Representative Freiberg as well.
I think we've gone afield of the purview of this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for reining us in.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I wouldn't be fair if I didn't give Jeff a hard time, but I think to Chair Freiberg, I understand where you're coming from. I have a 2-year-old, and convincing Jackson that it was still his bedtime the last few weeks after we sprung forward has been an adventure, to say the least. And so I understand that. What's the impact I think I would be much more interested in supporting a move like this if it was a federal move, a national move, or if we did it in groupings of states. One of the most confusing places I've ever been to was Bullhead City, Arizona, and then we had family in Bullhead City, Arizona, and then family in Laughlin, Nevada. And you go back across the river, and it was 2 different time zones, and then I forget which city it was, but one of the two follows daylight savings, and one of the two doesn't. And so, like, for a few months out of the year, it's the same time in Bullhead City, Arizona, as it is in Laughlin, but then other times, it's an hour apart, but then yet in other times, they're 2 hours apart. I didn't know where I was coming or going. It was so challenging to manage. And I know we have a lot of residents, a lot of individuals that work in the Minneapolis area, Minneapolis, St. Paul area, but live in across the border in Wisconsin for obvious tax reasons. But we also have people that for whatever reason, live here and commute to Wisconsin for work. And so my challenge is how this could be exacerbated with the confusion if we don't do this kind of with neighboring states. And so I'm wondering if you thought about that in other instances where we've seen legislation come forward where it would have more of a regional impact. We've seen kind of multi-state compacts. And so I'm wondering if that's something the author has considered or would be interested in kind of pursuing that approach.
Representative Zerwas.
Freiberg?
I'm sorry, Freiberg.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've thought about it. I mean, there are other states out there that do this. Arizona, which you mentioned, is one of them. We are a state that's entirely within one time zone, so I think that will alleviate some of the confusion that might occur. And certainly there are areas that are near time zone boundaries. You know, one of the testifiers mentioned Williston, North Dakota. I remember being up there one time driving south towards Dickinson. It was early in the morning, and I was almost out of gas. I just need to get to the gas station that's on the way there. And I didn't realize I had crossed a time zone on my way there, and the gas station I had to wait almost an hour for the gas station to open. So, I mean, it's something people do. Like I said, we are within one time zone. It would probably be better, regional compacts. I'm open to the idea, but I just feel like the hassle, the confusion, and the potential public health problems caused by these, in my view, unnecessary time changes outweigh potential confusion. And Mr. Kolb, I believe you spent some time as a resident of Arizona. He might actually have some personal experience with how that worked and whether or not he was confused because of not changing times there.
Actually, it was wonderful. It's great.
I'll just leave it at that.
Mr. Chair, if I could just chime in. Yes. I think, we'd all like to see this happen nationally, make it easier on all of us. But if none of us does anything, nothing's going to get done. And I think Minnesota is oftentimes the leader. And what we're presenting the committee today with is an opportunity to lead. And I think once Wisconsin and the Dakotas and Iowa see that it was successful, and it does make sense that we could have a regional impact and eventually a national impact.
Any other comments? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Freiberg. I was reading our DFL talk notes here, and I just have three quick questions. So it says change the clocks increases electric use by 4%. So I'd like to find out why. And then increases fuel use by cars. I'd like to know why. And then apparently this costs $434 million or something. So why is this? Anyways, three tough questions. Let's see how you.
I don't know the exact reason. Thank you for the question, Representative Lilly. I imagine it relates to heating costs and, turning it up when you wake up in the morning. I don't know. The second testifier seemed like he might be knowledgeable about more technical things, so I don't know if he's able to answer that or not. But certainly, in my mind, that's another reason to support this bill.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I went to school in Indiana, and as I recall, that was probably the last state that was on regular standard time forever. And it seems to me they just changed recently to start using daylight savings time. So I might look to them to see why they made their change. But again, they were an island in the whole country, as I recall.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And echo some of the and concerns, and quite honestly, I've never prefaced my vote on whether or not somebody is going to support this or not. And it probably doesn't affect me as much as staying 10 o'clock at session and trying to get home and get back here as far as sleep deprivation. I do have some concern, and not to oppose the bill, but I think that it'd be wise for us to look at the commerce issues that we face, looking at the financial industry and thinking of doing wire transfers and the cutoff times and so forth. If we have too much disparity between different states and different areas, I know that if you have to wire money to New York, what the time's going to be there, and it's as much a federal issue here as a state issue. To me, it's about implementation, not about whether or not it exists, but that as we legislate this, that we maybe build in a little bit of flexibility so that if indeed it does start to happen at the national level, that it isn't statutory, you have to do this or you have to do that. We can maybe use a little common sense, because I do have some concerns, especially in the financial industry, relative to who's going to be doing what time. And if we isolate ourselves too much, we could find ourselves with some difficulties. Again, not against the bill, just looking at leaving maybe a little bit of flexibility on implementation so we don't statutorily set ourselves into a box where we create an island. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any answers or comments to Representative Vogel's postulate?
I'd certainly be interested in talking to Representative Vogel as this moves forward to see if there is a way that can be done. I do think, as Representative Lehman said, we can kind of be a leader on this issue moving forward. I remember in a subcommittee, I think Representative Hertaus was joking. I think he was joking with this suggestion, but he suggested giving cities and counties the authority to set their own time. I don't think I'm ready to go that far myself. I don't think I want that much flexibility. I'm certainly, if you have suggestions, I'd be interested in talking to you, Representative Vogel.
I would add, I think I'm correct in that the only reason we have a standard time is because the railroad needed to have a common time that it could set its schedules as it went across the nation. So that essentially is the only reason that we ever came to an agreement. It was actually put upon us by our transportation system, which does bring the question, or at least lays before us the question of Representative Vogel, which is basically the question of common commerce connections. And they would clearly get worked out. I suspect that we can figure out how to trade stocks or transfer money at an appropriate time so that it gets where we want it to get. But it will be an issue if we start having differing approaches to the clock, which would be antithetical to why we have it there in the first place. And that's just an editorial comment. Any other comments or questions from the committee? If there are none, then renew your motion.
Sure. Thank you for the committee's consideration. I do think this is an issue that at the very least inconveniences a lot of people, and I think it's time for this change, and I think it makes sense. I don't know. Did you want to have it?
I don't think Minnesota has ever been afraid to lead, and as you say, Mr. Chair, I think the details can be worked out. But if we don't take action, we'll keep changing our clocks twice a year. Thank you.
So I'll renew my motion that House File 1397 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oppose the same?
No.
With that, I believe we are at the, I guess I got it. It is passed.
Actually, yes. If I could retake the chair, there is one housekeeping issue to address. So thank you, members, for your almost unanimous support there. There was an issue on Representative Vang's bill, and she has come back just in case we need to do anything. We've had an issue with the printer where it's cut off the bottom two or three lines of documents before us. In my mind, this is an argument in favor of moving away from legal-sized paper, but that's a separate discussion.
Now you're getting a little too wild.
Yes. I know a lot of time has actually been spent in the Rules Committee over the years on that topic.
I would concur.
Yes. So anyway, the amendment, I know, was missing a few lines there, so we're just handing out the completed amendment. I just want to make sure, I just wanted to make sure members are aware of that. We could reconsider it if anyone wanted to. There didn't seem to be a whole lot of controversy surrounding the bill, but I did want to make sure everyone at least had the opportunity. Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, the amendment had been posted. It was available for review. The posted amendment that every member had access to and the public had access to included the full amendment language that was posted online for review.
That is correct.
With that, Mr. Chair, I don't have any issue.
Okay. I don't think any action is necessary, though. Thank you for coming back, Representative. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a problem we have seen in a couple other committees where we've had bills that are cut off and or messed up like this. And I don't know if it's the printer. I think we had the discussion last week about we had another bill in this committee. The same thing happened. Yep. But it's happened in other committees that I'm in also. And I don't know. And last week when we had this happen, your legislative aide said she printed all the bills at the same time on the same printer, and the one got misprinted. And I don't know what the problem is, if it's a IT problem or if it's a problem in the program we're using, but it's been coming across a lot of different committees.
Yes, I'm aware. We'll certainly make every effort to try to prevent it from, try to double check them after they get printed in the future. So thank you again, Representative Vang.
Thank you.
And I don't believe there was anything else on the agenda. So any comments? Okay, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.